Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. I'm C.A. Brooks, and you are listening to the Friday Morning Show, probably soon to be changed to something else, but I'm still not sure what the title of the show is going to be. Because on Friday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific, we talk about A Course in Miracles. And today, I'm going to welcome one of my, I would say, good friends and colleagues and somebody who's certainly a mentor for me, Susan Dugan. So if you are listening live, this is February 2nd. 2018, but it doesn't matter because these are such holistic, you know, topics that we're talking about. They apply anytime and any moment. In fact, that is one thing that I feel very strongly about A Course in Miracles is not so much that you can just open it up and always get something you want, but you know, for the most part, you can. There are themes that run through A Course in Miracles. There are core principles and teachings. And so often, in fact, it's ironic, I had asked Susan what she wanted to talk about today, and she said, I'd really like to look at workbook lessons 101 and 102. And they fit in perfectly with another book that I have been reading that is actually written by Ken Wapnick, and it's called The Journey Home, and he's talking about the obstacles to peace, which is later in the text. But these lessons really just go hand in hand with that. In fact, Susan, I know Susan is already with me. I thought, wow, after rereading Ken's book, and I'm not finished yet, but as I'm reading through what he's talking about, these lessons really looked and felt very different to me when I read them this time. You know,
absolutely,
so
yes.
I thought, you know, and maybe that's a good thing because I realize every time we read the course and, you know, the best way to do the course is to really read the text as well as do the workbook lessons, because I think these are two perfect examples that if we're not reading the text, if we're not understanding literally the context of some of the language, some of the words, it would be so easy to misunderstand it. But once again, in light of the obstacles to peace, these two lessons really mean something very, very much deeper and richer than if I wasn't really, you know, delving into that part of the textbook. So in any case, before we get on, though, I want to invite people to come into the chat room. And the way that you do that is you go to our radio website, 12radio.com. And on the left side of the page, you click the chat button. And when you do, you'll automatically be redirected to Facebook where you can join the other people that are already there. Hey, Renee, thanks for being here this morning. It's good to see you. And as you do that, too, you can always post questions and comments. I try to keep an eye over there. So if you do have a question about something we're discussing or something we're talking about, we can try to address that. And in that way, you can be part of the discussion as well. So let's get on. And I do this typical introduction with Susan, but many of you know who she is because she's always here once a month. And she is a facilitator here in Denver, Colorado, of a number of different she has a weekly group that she facilitates. But she also teaches, and she's the co-founder for the School for A Course in Miracles here in Denver. And she also has written three books on forgiveness, which I'm always pushing and touting because those books, I mean, I've got all three on my bookshelf, and it's pretty often that I pull them off and truly do just flip to something and read it because Susan has a very insightful and funny way of making me laugh at myself, really. So, Susan, thank you for those books, and I really encourage you guys to check out those books too. And you can get them on Amazon. So welcome, Susan, and thanks for your suggestion of lessons 101 and 102.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm delighted always to be here.
Well, and I think you said that it was a bit of synchronicity because the obstacles to peace are where your particular discussion group is looking at too.
Right. The class that I teach on Tuesday nights here in Denver, we've been going through the text for some time, for several years now. And again, you know, going back to it. And we are in chapter 19 and had just begun the obstacles to peace. And I realized you and I had a talk this morning, and I thought, well, we haven't planned a topic. So what I'd been grappling with because I had just taught on Tuesday night on the beginning of the obstacles to peace, the first obstacle to peace is the desire to get rid of it. and what I was noticing, you know, which when you the course, as you were saying, it's a journey, and we go deeper and deeper with it over time by practice, by trying to really live it, to practice it, and to become real students of Jesus and to use our life as a classroom for learning, which is really the learning that everything, you know, that our first impulse is always wrong, that we're always basing, you know, that we need help. We don't know what's really going on here, and we're always invested in a personal self that is not serving us. So what I was looking at in myself was really how much what I was experiencing was really a much closer experience, understanding that I don't believe I deserve happiness, that I don't believe I deserve peace, and that I don't, you know, that I don't, on one level that I'm not aware of, I must not want it. And these two lessons came to mind, God's will for me, lesson 101, God's will for me is perfect happiness, which is followed by lesson 102, which is really, you know, just sort of a further continuation in a way of the first lesson. But what I was kind of getting more in touch with within myself, I think, is how much how deeply embedded the belief that we deserve punishment is, that I'm always kind of expecting to get screwed, you know, mm-hmm. in every situation. And we reach into the past for that. You know, we have gotten screwed in the past, and we have our stories about all of the things that have happened to us and all of the, you know, expectations that have not been met, and the betrayals and the seeking and never finding, and, you know, on and on and on, all the examples that we can cite of why we've concluded this. But I was just trying to be more present with it and really seeing that. And one of the examples that I'm going to use, because it's something that's just been up for me the last couple of weeks, and I think it's a good example, is one of my, you know, the Course talks about our special relationships, which are the people and most of the time with which we interact on a regular basis, and, you know, our closest relationships. But they don't have to be with other people, with a specific person. It can be your relationship with your job, or your relationship with, an aspiration, something, you know, your things, success, you know, money, whatever, health, all of those things. But what I was, one of the arenas in that has been a very fraught special relationship for me has been fiction writing. And I have experienced a lot of, you know, punishment. I would, from the view of my personal ego, punishment in that arena, in that, you know, I've written for years, and, you know, I was able to write a couple novels and get a couple big New York agents, but then nothing ever happened and they never went anywhere. And it's just been this, like, this kind of constant story that I've told myself about how, I don't deserve success in this area, and look at what a victim I am of all of this, you know. And so as a consequence, I kind of gave up on writing fiction. And but in the last year or two, I've been really longing to get back to it, you know, and I sort of had said to myself, I'm not going to write fiction again unless it really haunts me. And, you know, of course, characters have been haunting me in a sense. I mean, wanting to, you know, I'm really feeling this pull to do it. And so finally, but I haven't really been productive with it. You know, I've had all these stories that I've been telling myself. So I just very recently, this, you know, as of January, joined a writing workshop. And so, you know, that is a very run by a very renowned group. And so I went into it this time saying, you know what, this is going to be a classroom for me. This is not about whether I do well or don't do well. It's not about whether people approve of my writing or don't approve of my writing. It's not, you know, it's, I want to make it, actually what came to me was something that Ken always emphasized as a wonderful way to correct our obsession with putting me first, and that is to try to go into anything in which we're interacting in any way with at the forefront of our mind with the intention of making it about them instead of making it about me. And so that's kind of what the intention I went into this with, that I want to do this with Jesus. I want to do it to heal my mind, my mind about this special hate relationship I've gotten going with fiction writing. And so it's been a remarkable classroom for me the last few weeks, in which I watch myself going back into my old stories, going up and down with this. But for the most part, really just when I see myself doing that as a result of, it's an online class. So there's lots of, we're doing a lot of writing and a lot of posting of our writing, a lot of reading of other writers that are great writers, very inspiring. But there's a lot of interaction, written interaction, but it's interaction nonetheless. And I'm finding it to be a completely different experience than anything like this I've done in the past, in the sense that I am able to catch myself and realize I don't want the punishment anymore. when I start going into that, sense of my stuff is trash, I'm going to be shot down for this, what did they mean by that? All the things that our egos do, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever we're, interacting with something that we feel we've identified ourselves with as what we are. Instead I've been focusing on really enjoying their work, really enjoying my work, really being open to the possibility that this can be a joyful experience. And it has been a lot of the time. And then I watch the fear come up. Well, now if I've actually had a good experience with this, what will be the cost? Because
right.
Because that's the ego thought system. And this lesson talks about it. The whole course talks about it. We believe that there's a price for happiness because we believe that it's quite an outrageous belief and a belief that's fraught with denial, but we believe that we somehow purchased the possibility for individual happiness at the cost of pushing God's love away. At the cost of overthrowing the kingdom, the tiny mad idea that I could create another reality, another will outside of God, a personal self that was not part of the sonship, was a different self that now had to fend for itself because God was aware of this. And, now God was angry and on the prowl for us. That idea is at the root of all of our experience, and we pay through suffering. We pay through going through, the belief that sin, that sin, quote unquote, was real, is what drives all of our behavior in the world. And so we're constantly trying in a covert manner of trying to atone for that sin to prove that our lives, that we're having, I have a rough life. I have nothing ever works out for me. Mm-hmm. And it's not really about the form. It's about the belief that, that I deserve to suffer. I must suffer. I must interpret it in a way that feels victimized. And that's what we're doing all the time. And so it was really interesting and has been really interesting. And it's an ongoing classroom for me, but to learn a different way of relating in this group and to my relationship with writing through making my relationship with my teacher, with Jesus, that knows we're all the same, that knows we none of us deserve punishment, that knows we're all on the same team. by making that my intention, and which doesn't mean that I don't have egoic thoughts at all. I mean, I certainly do. They come up all the time. But that's how I'm learning to let go of them, is to see them. and to see that, you know what, this has hurt so much in the past when I've chosen to look at it this way, and I don't want it anymore. And I think that that's what this lesson is about. I think that that's what, you know, Jesus is inviting us to do in all of our special relationships, is to change our teacher over and over again, change our intention, make the purpose, the new purpose of what we're doing, a classroom for learning, for letting go of guilt, for learning that we don't deserve punishment, for, you know, entertaining the possibility that maybe we deserve happiness, because God's will for us is perfect happiness. And in truth, we are still awake in God, just dreaming a dream of suffering. And we're going to return to that happiness, but it doesn't, you know, we can return to it right here in the holy instant. And when we realize that we're on the same side. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I mean, and I love this topic, and thank you for going into such detail about, you know, what's been going on for you and how you are applying the principles. One thing I'd like you to explain a little bit more, because I think it could be misunderstood, is the idea of make it about them.
Okay.
You know, talk about that, because, of course, on an ego framework, when we're listening to the ego, we're always making it about other people, because right. Part of our suffering is to say, look, I'm suffering, I'm the victim, and somebody else is responsible. So when you say, let's make it about them, to explain that.
Okay. And that comes from, something that Ken Wapnick emphasized very much in his teaching. It's not my idea, but it is something that I have found very, very helpful and I use all the time. But so it's, and our first reaction is, well, you know, that's the problem. I'm a doormat. I've always made it about them, you know. And I mean, I get that. I've had that reaction, but that's not really, you know, ultimately what Ken is trying to emphasize there, I think, is, you know, that we're always putting our own needs first. In our mind, we're the center. We're the dream. We think we're, you know, we don't know we're the dreamer of the dream, but we know we're the hero of the dream. And we see things only from our perspective. We're completely egocentric. We're completely focused on what am I going to get out of this? What am I, you know, what do they think about me? It doesn't even occur to us that other people might also feel fragile.
Right.
that other people are going through whatever they're going through in their own dream of suffering, you know? And so it's just a way of getting us to realize that everybody, another thing that Ken emphasized that is helpful. And I guess it used to be attributed to Plato, but later was attributed to Philo and the philosopher. But and that is the idea, the quote that everybody here is fighting a hard battle. You know, everybody that thinks they are living in exile from God, you know, dreaming a dream of exile from God, unaware that they're dreaming, feeling lost and alone and lonely, as Lesson 82 puts it, alien here. You know, and can never find a child that can never find their way home. Everybody that seems to be out there in my dream is fighting that same hard battle, is walking that same lonely road that I am. And I don't know what they're dreaming, but I can be sure the content of their dream, if they're choosing to identify with guilt, is the same as mine, is filled with the belief that they deserve punishment. And so to make it about them, to think of it as making it about them instead of going into a situation with the idea of making it about them, is kind of a correction for the only looking at my own interests. You know, the Course is always trying to emphasize that whenever we're seeing separate interests over the common interest, the only common interest that we really share, which is the need to heal our mind and awaken from this dream. When we're hooked on the idea of differences and separate interests, we know we've chosen the ego, and suffering will ensue. Period. There's not going to be a good outcome from, you know, a good experience outcome from that. It's impossible. It will lead to suffering. And so by the idea of making it about them is really just a device to try to kind of correct my always, you know, what am I doing right now? Am I putting myself, is this about me or is it about what I'm trying to heal? You know, this, the purpose, healing my mind of the idea of a needy me. Because the truth is nothing outside me, you know, we know that we're learning from the course that nothing outside me can take my peace away, but nothing outside me can fill me up either.
Right.
You know, that's a lie. That's, I believe that I need to constantly feed on my external, you know, on my need for approval, my need for love and affirmation, and my need to be told I'm okay all the time, and my need to, you know, there's my physical needs, but all these emotional needs that I have, that everybody seems to have, you know, are because, which are never enough, which is, are all because we believe we completely lack now love. You know, we pushed real love away, and so the best we can do is try to find as many substitutes as we can to fill that lack. And of course it there's never enough, you know?
Right.
It lasts for a nanosecond and then we
need. Yeah. If that isn't the truth.
Right. So, you know, so anyway, it's not about being a doormat. It's not about, you know, the course is never telling us to put up with abuse or to put up with, you know, or not to speak up for ourselves or whatever. But, I am learning that going to Jesus with this, going to our inner teacher with this, the part of our mind, that memory of wholeness and innocence for all within us, almost always results in me not needing to assert myself the way I thought I was going to have to. And if there is still a need to assert myself in the sense that there needs to be, you know, tough love with a kid or a hard conversation with a loved one or something like that, or you know, an expression of how something has hurt me or whatever, it's not coming from a place of needing the other person to agree with me. It's not coming from a place of needing to be right. You know, it just kind of flows in a compassionate way and is not hooked at all on correcting someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah. And once again, as I'm listening and I'm thinking about this, you know, making it about them, I have noticed, particularly this week, but, you know, you notice it a lot. And that is that people sometimes, the most what I consider unaware people, are all, and myself included, always thinking that we're doing everything for everybody else. I do this and I do that. I'm always putting their needs before me. But what I recognize sometimes is I kind of stop and I go, but aren't you doing what you want to do for them?
Right.
You know, it's like I'm being, as you said, if we really, really could get honest with ourselves, we're not doing something for other people. We're often doing what we need to do for other people.
To feel good about ourselves.
To feel good. Yes. And,
right.
You know, would it be different if I literally could just drop it? And as you say, just say, you know what, I'm going to go in there with a different teacher. I'm going to pretend I'm clueless about what this person needs or wants.
Right.
And, you know, then spontaneously be with that person. And that I just think is a super, super hard thing to do. I mean, you really have to be conscious because, you know, and I recognize too, some of what we're talking about, it's a hard sale, I would say, with A Course in Miracles to convince us that there really is an ego talking and that that ego is always, 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 I mean, its belief system is pretty consistent in its insanity. And yet we do believe it. And so we slip all the time right back into that thinking, well, look at this. I put myself out there. I did this and I did that. And it's always about them. And it's really not. It's always about our needing to prove that we are something, you know, needing to prove something, needing to be right, and needing to be the victim. And if it's not right. You, if you're not willing to play with me and make me feel victimized, then I'll go find somebody who will.
Right. Well, I mean, it's really the practice of this, the looking with our teacher at what we're doing and becoming aware of the pain that it's causing us, that eventually, you know, that makes us eventually say, I don't want to do this anymore. See, I mean, in this example that I'm using, I've done this to myself for, well, I don't know, like 30 years, you know? I mean, I haven't been practicing the course for 30 years, but I've been beating myself up using writing to victimize myself for 30 years.
Right.
And blaming others for it. And it's painful, you know? I mean, and it's got you, we've got to recognize, you know, same thing in my relationship with my husband, my relationship with my parents, my relationship with you know, some of my friends that I've had difficult relationships with and bosses. And so I think that it's the recognition. I mean, it really is a process that we go through, and it really is the recognition that this is causing me pain. And when we're dealing with someone else that we're trying to fix or, you know, in some way do for or help, and then we feel that resentment coming up, which kind of sounds like what you were talking about. You know, the best reminder for me when I'm in those kinds of situations, when I see that coming up in myself, and I think comes straight from the course, is to remember that everybody here also has their own atonement path. And we do not know, because we always judge on form and behavior when we've chosen the ego, we have no idea what's in their best interests.
Yes.
We have no idea what's in our best interests even, you know? And so in terms of form, for sure. And so, you know, everybody here is fighting the same hard battle, but how they find their way home is none of our business. And you know, the best we can do, what you said at the end of when you were talking about that, was to be with them. To be with them, to choose our teacher, to be with our teacher, you know, to use the power of my decision making mind to choose to be in my right mind with my teacher that is the right mind, and to be with them, whoever it is, and you know, and to ask for help in seeing them as Jesus does. That is where the shift comes from. That willingness to question again and again. And again, it comes from that questioning whenever I'm feeling upset, put out by whatever's going, you know, someone else's stuff or my stuff, whatever it is. That's my clue of which teacher I've chosen. And that's my clue that I need help, that I'm choosing to suffer here and I don't have to. And,
yes.
And, you know, and that's where the learning takes place in my willingness to do that over and over again, as for however long it takes. You know, and I was thinking about that this morning before we talked, that, you know, so much of the time my ego screams that, you know, you're not getting anywhere with this course. It's not, you know, you're just such a failure. You're such an imposter. You teach this and look at your life, you know.
Right.
And all the stuff that all that inner critical voice in this writing class, you know, the critical voice that comes up again and again and again. And, you know, that idea that I'm not getting anywhere with this, but you know what? That's not true. We are getting somewhere. The fact that we can choose more quickly, we can recognize more quickly that we've chosen the ego, and recognize that we don't want to keep going in that direction. You know, I used to go for weeks on an ego jag, you know, and a jaunt. And that time really shortens because I know I'm wrong. The practice of over and over reminding myself over many years that I must be wrong, even when I didn't believe it, I now do believe it, you know? And I know that peace is available, even if I'm not ready to choose it. And so it changes a lot through this practice. The course isn't for everybody, but if people are drawn to it, then it is asking us to become students, to look at it as you know, to make my life to be this new classroom in which I'm learning a new kind of forgiveness from a teacher, a part of my mind that I wasn't even aware I had. And it's going in a different direction than the world's teaching, and it's going to ask me to question every value that I hold, because every value that I hold as a personal self is a reflection of the ego thought system. I mean, it's all really the same value. I exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. That's right. Everybody's story.
Mm-hmm.
But how's that working out for you? I mean, Jesus yeah. just keeps telling us again and again, you know. We might want to read a couple paragraphs of this to you know, I think might illuminate some of what we're talking about, the first uh-huh. couple paragraphs.
Sure.
So he says, so this is lesson 101, God's will for me is perfect happiness. Today we will continue with the theme of happiness. This is a key idea in understanding what salvation, what real salvation means. You still believe it, salvation, asks for suffering as penance for your quote-unquote sins. This is not so. Yet you must think it, that it, so you must believe it while you believe that sin is real and that God's Son can sin. You know, the original mistake that we made, the Course tells us, is to take the tiny mad idea that we could separate from the undifferentiated union of our, you know, our true one child of God's self that's, you know, seamlessly connected with God. We took that idea seriously, even though it didn't really have any effects. And we made up a whole fantasy about all the different scenarios of what that might have looked like. And we made up a God that believed in it. But it didn't happen. I mean, the Course over and over and over again is telling us, you know, your real need is to awaken to remember that nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that we is too fearful for us to do all at once. But we do it gradually through this practice with help from our teacher.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, what I was thinking, and especially with some of these words, I kind of flashed back on that I was raised Catholic, for which I really am very thankful. But one of the things, and I even went to a Catholic school, so that was a big deal in terms of catechism or learning Catholicism.
Oh, yeah.
Religion was an actual class. And in some ways, you were never out of that class. But, you know, an hour a day was always devoted to that. And one of the things is we memorized all these lines, you know, who is God? You know, what is God's will? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I remember even as a 7-year-old, hearing some of those things about God punishing us for sins, or babies are born in sin and, you know, they have to be baptized. And even at 7, I said, this doesn't make any sense. Why would God do this?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's not that I think I was so bright. I mean, I think most of us, if we ever stop to look at it, we go, okay, how can this God be totally loving and also be doing all these horrible things or allow horrible things? And to me, I really do think that kind of basis coming out of that with Catholicism and that set up for me questioning always. And I really dipped into many, many, many religions and spirituality in my life, but I was always the questioner. You know, I guess maybe,
yeah.
you know, it, and that was it. It's like, I want this to be logical. I want this to make sense. And it never did. And nobody ever had any really great answers for that. And so once again, you know, I even think in this lesson, he's like, how can you believe this? How can you believe that this is true? You know, if there's a loving God, why would his will for you not be perfect happiness?
Right.
And why do you think that you can purchase, you know, or pay this cost of, you know, of suffering, and that somehow that's going to make it okay, that a loving God would say, okay, well, as long as you suffer enough, then, you know, you will win the prize. I mean, why have we throughout centuries believed that that makes sense?
Well, and the Course, of course, you, as you know, explains the ego dynamics of why we do, the deep, deep fear of ever going back to the mind. You know, I mean, we had to dissociate this whole thing and never, you know, just mindlessly keep focused on the outside and the ego story, without ever questioning it. You know, questioning is what the ego is most afraid of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but yes, it's, you know, I also was raised Catholic. I remember those old, you know, pale blue and cream colored catechism booklets
yeah.
that, with the rote rhetorical. In fact, I even got really, really sick that year. And so, you know, almost didn't make my first communion because I missed so much of catechism. But, anyway, it's the colossal denial and dissociation collectively and personally that we're engaged in here is really quite astonishing. And Jesus is getting us to question that and look at it. But there's tremendous fear very deeply within the mind over ever going back to that sort of crime scene, you know, that belief that if we went back there to the scene of the crime, the decision to be separate from God, God would strike us blind. You know, that's the ego's story. And that's a direct quote from the Course.
Right.
So, you know, maybe if we read the next paragraph, I mean, he talks about that punishment, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he says, if sin is real, then punishment is just. And of course, we believed sin is real. It's not. But this is the ego thought system. If sin is real, then punishment, it deserves punishment. Punishment is just and cannot be escaped. That is the cost of individuality, right? In the mm-hmm. ego's scenario. Salvation thus cannot be purchased but through suffering. You know, I exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault because look what a miserable life I have,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, God needs to go get somebody else, you know, those ones that are happy, right? Look at all those people that have great big houses and have all this money and, you know, have these wonderful relationships. They should pay, right? So salvation thus cannot be purchased but through suffering. If sin is real, then happiness must be an illusion, for they cannot both be true. If God was perfect happiness and I made a world, you know, that is opposite of God, then there's going to be a price, and the price is suffering. The sinful warrant, so the sinful bodies warrant only death and pain, and it is this they ask for. Not consciously, but unconsciously, because that's what helps me believe I can get away with it. For they know it waits for them, and it will seek them out and find them somewhere, sometime, in some form that evens the account they owe to God. That's the human condition. That's mortality. None of us gets out of here alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would escape him in their fear, God in their fear, and yet he will pursue, and they cannot escape. You know, so we made this idea of a God in the ego's image, you know, this powerful, gigantic man, right, that has superpowers.
Right.
And is just as schizophrenic as we are,
yeah.
You know.
Well, we made him in our image.
In our image. Yeah. I mean, think about that. To a child, I was actually writing something. The topic that we were writing on this week was God. And, you know, I was writing a conversation about a kid and a mom, you know, a kid asking the mom, her trying to explain to the kid the idea of Christianity and God and Jesus, and the kid kind of going, so he brings her, you know, the kid kind of like, whoa, are you kidding me? This is wait a minute.
go ahead.
No, just so it, I mean, it is, but this is what we believe. We believe because we believed that the sin of separation was real. Everything else, all of the other incredibly nonsensical dualistic things we believe stemmed from that. And it all is, you know, the guilt that we felt over believing that we really did this and it had real consequences. Is at the bottom of everybody's mind. That's why everybody's fighting a hard battle to defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's why everybody's trying to be right, to be, you know, to get as much of their needs met as they can, to point the finger at everybody else and blame them. I'm not the one. You know, it's them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, and I actually did have the experience once of trying to explain to somebody as an adult who she had been, you know, Christianity, basically, and a couple
Right.
of things. Like she literally said to me, you know, and she kind of did it in a whisper, took me aside, and she goes, "What is all this Easter stuff about?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, I don't get it. What is it?" And she had actually been raised by a professional couple who I would say probably were more agnostic than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't go to church. She didn't learn any of the typical Christian catechism kinds of things. So she literally didn't know this. And but it's kind of like what you were talking about. It almost felt like an alien and trying to explain to her what is ingrained
right.
in most of us and yet trying to make it make sense. Well, see, God had a son and he decided that if the son died, that would make us okay.
Right.
And it's sort of like he did what? And why would his son?
What did he do? Like you see the image of the cross, right?
Yeah. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What does that do for us? I mean, and trying to explain why that made any logical sense. Obviously I could not.
Right.
I could not.
Right.
And then trying to explain. And then, of course, with Easter, the big deal is, you know, not only did he die, but he came back to life. And she's like, he came back to life? You know what I mean? Or,
right.
Or, you know, he resurrected. And you know, I might as well have been explaining something sci-fi to her.
Sure. Yeah.
And yet I felt frustrated because I thought, you know, this had been drilled into my head for years. And like I said, I always questioned it. I don't think it ever made sense. But when you're trying to explain it to somebody who truly has been not steeped in this kind of thinking, you realize you can't make it make sense.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, maybe C.S. Lewis, who is a famous theologian, maybe he could, but I could not make this make any kind of sense to her.
Right. And that should tell us something, right?
Should. I mean, a lot of times in our lives, even at the end of this particular lesson, there's a line that says, "Today, escape from madness."
Right. And I mean, that's all over the course. Jesus is telling us all the time that when we believe this, when we're acting on this belief, we're insane.
Yes.
I mean, there's no, you know, it's just insane. It's not sinful, but it is insane because,
yes.
I mean, it makes no sense. You know, if God is all loving, if God is complete innocence and only God exists, how could anything other exist? You know, and why would God involve himself in a story of sin, guilt, and fear? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a rhetorical question that's asked throughout the course.
Well, and it's been asked throughout our lives.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing I also want to say is I'm really not, I guess, wanting to malign or make fun of Catholicism or Christianity, other than to say, to me, this is a big cultural story that we continue to feed into all of us. I mean, because we want life to make sense.
Right.
And so from time to time, we keep resurrecting all the stories. I mean, look at all the mythology. Look at the stories that go from culture to culture to culture. And this is a big one because we somehow think it makes it, it does. If for the ego's idea of we are victims, we are guilty, and we've got to pay, this sounds like a logical story, you know?
Right,
and if we can put it in these terms, and then we can form religions, and we can have rituals, and somehow, you know, then take all these steps to eventually save ourselves. But once we really question it, we will realize over and over, it doesn't make sense, and we buy into it because of our fear.
Right. Right.
But on the other hand, if it works for you, you know, I like I said, I don't want to knock it. I'm very glad I was raised Catholic.
Right. And I mean, it's just it isn't just Catholicism. It's you know, we're all religions and mythologies and spiritualities are trying to find some kind of meaning here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing sinful about that. But Jesus, I mean, the Course is very emphatic that there is no meaning here.
Yeah.
That the world is a denial of the only meaning that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can, I mean, that's, the, if the Course is your path, then, you know, you've got to at least be open to that idea, you know, and to, of questioning every value that you hold.
Right.
And, you know, this is not going in the direction of the, of other spiritualities. It's not going in the direction of making a better world, a better dream. It's going in the direction of the mind. And it's a mind that's outside the dream. And, you know, it's a mind that is within which nothing has really left the mind. You know, the Course tells us that the body and the world are in the mind. They're figments of the decision-making mind's imagination, you know, and you know, that isn't something, again, we go to directly, but by learning, by getting in touch with the suffering on a moment-to-moment basis that my decision for separate interests is bringing, by learning to make it about them, by learning to recognize our same need, same insanity and same need to find our way home, and to learn that I am not the home of evil, darkness, and sin, that we're all fighting the same hard battle. That's what's going to, you know, I don't even have to directly entertain all of the rest of it. I have to grasp it intellectually that's where this course is going. But the awareness that is true of where I really am will of itself happen through this practice, and it will be ultimately a very joyful experience. And every time I even change my mind about, you know, you're victimizing me, that you're the cause of my suffering, there's a shift toward you know, discovering the innocence within myself that is a joyful experience. And so I begin to want more of that versus the suffering that, you know, I'm always going to experience and do experience when I'm choosing to make it about me.
Right. And, you know, once again, we pound this in, it's one of the core principles of the course. We have a choice.
Yes,
we are decision makers. And
yes,
the more, it doesn't matter what our suffering is or our happiness or anything else, the more we can remember that we have a choice, then we're able to shift the energy. And, I can tell you just, you know, I think just as a person, that probably is so core for so many people. How many times do I hear somebody say, I don't have a choice? I have
absolutely
no options.
Absolutely. That's, you never know, true. Yeah.
That's
at the level of the mind, it's
yeah.
never true. Yeah.
But that's one of the things we're most afraid of in life. I have no options. I have no choice.
Right.
But on the level of the mind, as you're saying, you know, even starting to self-identify, I am a decision maker.
Right.
I am not the victim of the world I see. I am a decision maker, and I choose my perception and my interpretation of what's going on. And I think the more we can keep that, you know, very firmly somehow in our consciousness,
right, right.
It can shift everything. And there again, the situation doesn't change. We might still be in this challenging
absolutely.
Relationship or,
but it has a different purpose.
But yeah. It has a different purpose, and we don't see ourselves as victims.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's just so refreshing all on its own. It's just like, to me, it's like a breath of fresh air. All of a sudden, we don't feel like we have no options and we have no choices. We are a decision maker.
Well, we're afraid to take responsibility for our reactions because we think that what comes with that is taking responsibility for the separation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guilt comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And our strategy has always been to blame it on someone else. But honestly, our freedom comes from taking responsibility for our reactions back to the mind.
Right.
You know, that is the answer. So, yes, you know, that the great transformative power of A Course in Miracles and the whole point of the book is to get us to gradually begin to experience ourselves as decision-making minds and to begin to disidentify with ourselves as personal selves and bodies.
Right.
You know?
Very well said, Susan.
Well, I think, are we almost out of time? Or
yeah, we are. We are out of time. So I guess this would be a good time to just kind of close and say if you have any final comments about the lessons and to go into any kind of announcements that maybe you've got today.
Nothing really more about the lessons in terms of announcements. Not really. I still encourage people to, the foundation at this time is really not going to be doing any more classes.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're not closing. they still exist, and they are actually in the process, I understand, of completely revamping their website and updating it. And so that's exciting. And I think that it will, it's going to be down for a little while in February. I forget exactly when, but just while they're making those changes. But, you know, they're not going away, not to panic. They're not going away. There's going to be some new and exciting things on the website. And all of the bookstore will still be there. There's going to be some streamed videos of Ken's, happening with the new, a lot more interactivity, it sounds like, from the new website. So I still very highly encourage people to, what helped me and you, really begin to understand this and begin to try to learn to live it in our lives was Ken. I mean, you can go through read through the text a million times and you're not going to get the understanding that you get by availing yourself of his materials, which are really, really help you understand this and help you learn to live it. So.
Mm-hmm. And Ken is a phenomenal teacher.
Phenomenal.
As I've told people before, I'm so lucky. I feel very fortunate that I was actually able to take a workshop with him, because truthfully, my friend Mark had given me all this stuff from Ken and I just couldn't get into it. It seemed so dry. And I was like, I'm not resonating with this guy, even though Mark just loved him and whatever. So then Ken actually came to Denver and he did a weekend workshop. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it turned everything around for me. And I think it did, because, I've said this before, I really respond to humor in you, but Ken was so funny.
Oh,
and
yes. Yeah.
Well, once again, it's not because he was a comedian, but because once again, it's kind of like what we're talking about here, explaining to somebody why, there's a cruel God and all he really wants to do is punish you and blah, blah, blah. You're just like, what? And I mean, it makes you realize how ridiculous or how funny it is. And that's the way that Ken was funny, yes. Not because he was cracking jokes, but because he was explaining to us what our belief system is. And when you see it explained so clearly, you can't but laugh. So once I kind of got that visual on him and was able to spend those 2 days with him, suddenly I found his books and his tapes and his videos. They just opened up. It was all of a sudden I could so respond and relate to everything he said. So, that's not possible anymore because Ken is gone, at least in the body. But he left us just so much stuff. And I, for one, just feel like I don't even think I'll live long enough to listen to all of it or to watch all of it. And, that's kind of one of my goals, is to just continue to really kind of learn from him, or at least have him guide me as I, kind of find my inner guide and teacher.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And he was such a, beyond his brilliant intellectual abilities and communication skills, he was such an ego-free presence, which I think, and lighthearted man. And, I think the ego-free presence of our inner teacher was reflected really well in form in Ken. He was a real demonstration of what making it about them means, and what true forgiveness, living a truly forgiving life, meant. And so we were extraordinarily lucky to have experienced him. Yeah.
Yes.
And to continue to experience him, because he hasn't really gone anywhere.
So, and for those, somebody's actually asking in the chat room, if you look at a previous post, I'll put it again, but I posted two things: the foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is what we're talking about, which is basically www.facim. So it's A Course in Miracles, ACIM with F in front of it.org. And like I said, I posted that in the chat room, but you can also find Susan on her website, which is www.forays.org. Forgiveness, and forays is F-O-R-A-Y-S forisinforgiveness.com. So that's all one word, Foris in Forgiveness. So you can also go to Susan's website. But yeah, that facim.org is just an incredible website with all kinds of what I like to say free stuff.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of things to read and questions. They've got like, what, 1,000 questions asked and answered on that website. So there's just all kinds of things that you can find there. So once again, I'll post it in the chat room again, but it is there for anybody who wants to go over to Facebook and see that. So, Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And thanks to all the listeners and everybody in the chat room, and also to our producer, Scott Weaver. Thanks for being here today. And next week, we're going to listen to Ken talk about some lessons. I put together some excerpts of some talks that Ken has done, and actually, we were going to play them last week, and we had a technical issue. So now I think we got that fixed. So hopefully this next Friday, you can listen to Ken Wapnick talking about some of the workbook lessons and some of the ones that I think are particularly good, including I am not the victim of the world I see. So please tune in next week, next Friday, same time, 8 a.m. Pacific, and I will talk to you then. For now, I hope that you have a really good week. Relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and with my guest Susan Dugan here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you think about life and spirituality.